morning, good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Glenn Coble, and you're listening to WWGH here in Marion, Ohio, 107.1. And hopefully, our signal is much stronger today. Yesterday, we were struggling with an antenna problem that, thanks to the Marion Winds, that'd be a good name for a football team, wouldn't it? Or something along that line. Maybe a sailing team. Anyway, we were struggling a little bit to make sure we got everything on, and I forgot to click a button here, so I just did it, and hopefully we will get that noise out of the background there. There we go. Now we've got it. All right. Anyway, we're here, and the signal's stronger, and we're going to talk about baseball today. Today is the opening day of 2021 baseball, which thank goodness it's on, and it looks like we're going to actually have real baseball, not crowds of cardboard stand-ins. I don't know how soon they're going to allow more and more people to come, but I think fairly rapidly. I think that on opening day they're going to allow full crowds. I'm not sure if it's 100%, but we'll have baseball again. My wife loves to watch. We bought the MLB package because my wife loves baseball. I like baseball a lot, but my wife loves baseball. She's a little disappointed this year. She thinks that the players aren't as good looking as they used to be. I don't know. I guess I watch shows. I watch Big Bang Theory so I can look at Penny. So I guess it's okay if my wife watches Major League Baseball so she can look at all those young men in their beautiful uniforms and terrific shape that they're all in. Some of them aren't in such good shape, but most of them are in pretty decent shape. But we're going to talk about baseball today. I'm going to start the hour with Little League, and I hope you're interested in Little League, but even if you're not, that's what we're going to talk about. And there's some interesting facts about Little League. I got interested in baseball. Well, as you know, I was in intercollegiate athletics for 18 years at two different universities, and the first university, DePaul University, did not have baseball. We did have softball, but we did not have baseball. And the second university, Ohio University, does have baseball and has had baseball for a long time. I think they still have baseball. I guess I should check that up. I know they've dropped men's track, but I don't know about I'm pretty sure they have baseball. So I have followed baseball that way as a professional administrator, but I have also followed baseball as my youngest son got older and older. He was obviously talented in the baseball realm and ended up becoming a national All-American. So we followed his college team very closely, and his college team went to the World Series two of his 4 years, and actually ended up runner-up both times. But the university he went to, this always bothered me a little bit. He went to Marietta University or Marietta College, and they would not allow the young men to have a runner-up ring, which always annoyed me because I'm wearing a ring right now that says OU was MAC champions 1 year. That's not even close to runner-up in basketball, but we got rings and watches and all sorts of things for at the different universities I worked at. They would not allow the young men to have a ring, even that said that they were district champions, and they were, or that they were national runner up, which they were. So that kind of annoyed me. But the baseball tradition at Marietta. If you know nothing about Marietta, let me tell you, the baseball tradition is almost as important as Marietta College itself. Now, they are very big in petroleum studies as well. I should go on to say they're a very, very fine school. They have very good teachers, professors, and we're very happy that our son got his degree from Marietta College. But baseball is very important. It's the supreme important sport. They do have football, and they do have basketball, but I think baseball probably is even more paid attention to because they go to the national champions so many times. As a matter of fact, I think the year after Andrew, I think he was coaching there at the time. They won. No, he wasn't. It was the year after he coached. They were national champions. So it kind of interesting, and it's kind of turned me into a baseball fan, whereas initially I was more of a basketball fan. When you work at DePaul University and you go to the Final Four, you become a basketball fan real quickly. So anyway, we're going to talk about Little League first of all, and Little League is a little different, but Little League is where it all starts. I have several grandchildren that are playing Little League, either baseball or I have a granddaughter who is also a little league softball player, and she's not a little leagues anymore. This year she's a college or a high school softball player, but she was. So it kind of is the basis for lots of these kids, and some of these kids will continue on. Now I'm going to leave it up to you to decide whether it's important, but there are parents that are so into the baseball side of their little league baseball side that they tell their kid they can't play any other sport until they get really good at baseball, and they kind of turn them into a baseball savant. Well, it's been my experience that a lot of those kids, as their bodies change, in any sport, whether it's baseball or not, I remember basketball is quite obvious. The kids in junior high, the really tall kid in junior high doesn't grow another inch, so he's still 5'8 or 5'10 when he gets to high school, and he doesn't play any more basketball at all, even though he was the star center when he was in junior high. I'm not a big fan of telling your kid they have to specialize in the sport. All three of my children were very active in, all three of them were very active in three sports, and one of them, my youngest, was active in four sports. So, which when you pay to play, it gets a little expensive, but the kids wanted to do that, so we allowed it, as long as they kept their grades up, right? Anyway, the baseball for my eldest son was another story entirely. He was not good at baseball. And I've told him that 1,000 times, and he could be listening to me right now. I'm not sure. But, Christopher, you couldn't throw a baseball any farther than I can throw it now, and I've really lost my distance on it. But Christopher was a terrific, and I mean a terrific middle distance runner, college level, Division I college level track runner. We're proud of all three of our kids. All three of them attained quite a bit of notoriety in athletics. They were all pretty smart. I'm not sure which one was the smartest of the three. They were all in the upper part of their classes, so we were happy with that as well. As long as they maintained that, they could do just about anything they wanted to do as far as extracurricular goes. And all three of them also were pretty good musicians, we really enjoyed that. And I always have said to audiences, and I've said to people that have asked me to lecture about athletics, I've always said that we need to be more active in allowing and encouraging our kids to be active, not only in academics, which is the primary reason they're in school, but also active in sports, even if they're not a great athlete. It teaches them teamwork. It teaches them how to handle adversity. There are so many things in athletics that are important. I also am a firm believer that they should all be involved in some way or another with some music. You can sing in the choir, you can play the oboe like my daughter did, you can play the trombone like my eldest son did, or drums as my youngest did. And there are lots of outlets for kids to be involved in music. Now, I was involved in music all the way through high school and also into college, and sang in a folk trio that had a couple of albums, so we were pretty good, and I always credited that with making me more of a rounded human being. I know I'm getting way off of baseball, but we're coming up to a break, and I will clear my throat because I'm a little verklempt this morning. But we'll talk about Little League right after we come back from our two-minute break. That is, if I didn't mess up the board when I when I forgot to hit the right button. If nothing comes on here in 20 seconds, we will know I messed up the board, and I will go on without the break. I will drink my coffee right in front of you. Well, I hope you're hearing us better. Some places, I'm told, are good, and some places are not quite so good as they had been. But hopefully some places are even
Charlie,
better.
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All three times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, apparently I didn't mess everything all up. We're back here at WWGH. I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air, and we're going to talk about baseball now. I looked up all sorts of stuff about baseball, and a lot of it is very interesting. This we're going to spend most of the first 30 or 40 minutes on Little League. In 1938, Carl Stotts, he was a lumberyard clerk, and he lived in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Does that sound familiar? He was playing catch with his nephews one day, and he tripped over a lilac bush. And in his frustration, quickly he turned to inspiration, and he decided to start a local league so that they'd have a place to play. And so he organized this baseball on a real baseball field. That summer, he set down the rules for Little League Baseball. He was the guy. Carl Stotts was the guy that set down the rules for Little League Baseball. And that included, the size of the field. And they still are the same size that he put down. And there have been people that have said the field should be extended a little bit because there are a lot of home runs hit in Little League, sports. But it's not too bad. It's no worse than Major League Baseball. he gathered enough kids and equipment and stuff, and they began playing. And that was the very first, in 1938, that was the very first, the beginning of what we now know as Little League, which was started appropriately in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, where it remains. If you go out there, they have a very nice diamond now, from what I understand. I have not been there, but I have a nephew-in-law, I guess he is, that has umpired there more than once. As a matter of fact, he's going to umpire there this year in one of their big outings that they have at the Williamsport field. The first teams, you know, a lot of these teams were especially in the pro sports, they're named after animals and animate things. They're not, very rarely anymore are they named after companies. They were several years ago. The Negro League, almost exclusively the teams, well, they all had sponsors. That's how they paid for, you know, their equipment and their field and stuff like that. But Little League today, they rely on the support of local sponsors like most of the pro teams did a long time ago. Now they just rely on television revenue, I think. You know, they have to buy bats and they have to buy helmets. So most of the Little League teams had to get sponsors to help them out. That was, you know, that was true then. It's true now. So in 1938, Mr. Stotts went out and started trying to find a sponsor so he could pay for all the different equipment that they needed. And he solicited 56 different local businesses. And if you've ever gone to a very successful Little League field, you'll see signs of all sorts of sponsors all around the outfield. Well, that's kind of what he did. Eventually, he secured enough sponsors that he was able to get started, but he had two major businesses, Lundy Lumber and Jumbo Pretzel. Those were the two businesses that were really the major sponsor of the first Little League game. And it was played on June 6th, 1939. By the way, Lundy Lumber trounced the Lincoming Dairy, which was another sponsor, 23-8 in 1939, in the very first Little League game. Kind of interesting. I remember going to Little League games that were easily that big a trouncing. You know, it kind of depends on the pitcher. And some teams have one great pitcher, and if he's not pitching that day, it may be a trouncing. Hopefully they get two pitchers and they can kind of switch them off. But the first tournament of champions was the Maynard Midgets. In 47, Little League Baseball held its championship tournament. And they had 12 teams that competed. And it was a pretty far cry from the sprawling international competition players compete in today. You know, they get them from Japan. They get them from Africa. They get kids from Europe. They get teams from all over. But it still drew 2,500 people. So it was pretty big, the Little League Baseball Championship back in 1947. The Maynard Midgets defeated the Lock Haven All-Stars 16-7. A little closer game. A little more interesting, right? In the spring of 48, Mr. Stotts, you remember him, he's the guy that started, organized an exhibition game in a town near Williamsport. And it was one of many games that Stotts put on for community interest by adding Little League programs. There was something fortuitous about this particular game. In the stands was a man named E.H. Brandt, a senior editor with the Saturday Evening Post. And he was vacationing nearby, and he came over to watch the game. And he was kind of excited about what was going on, and Brandt assigned a writer and a photographer to write about Little League which at that point was expanding very slowly along the East Coast. After the Post, more than 4 million subscribers read the story the following year. Stotts was inundated for requests from different communities, eager to start their own Little League teams between 49 and 53, and the number of Little Leagues doubled every year. So that's really the Saturday Evening Post was the genesis for the genesis of the beginning of popularity of Little League sports. The first international teams, they were down around the Panama Canal. That's where they were. A little more than 10 years after Stotts tripped over that lilac bush, Little League Baseball expanded outside of the United States. The first international teams started at the same time in 1950 and were situated on either side of the Panama Canal. One team, coached by a former Major League player, Joe Cicero, was called the Pacific, and the other was called the Atlantic. Very apropos, considering it was on both sides of the Panama Canal. Most of the players were American transplants, children, you know, kids of people that worked in the canal or military people. So they wanted to play their American pastime. So that's what they did. And that was the very first time Little League became international. Today, by the way, there are nearly 90 countries that participate in Little League Baseball, all the way from Russia to Australia, all over. Kids from six different continents play in Little League Baseball. Teams from Asia have been dominant, especially lately, at the annual World Series tournament, while the Caribbean team from Dominican Republic and Curacao have been in the ascendancy lately. Those are the teams that are really strong. Now, the Dominican Republic has been very strong as well in Major League Baseball, as you know. There are a lot of Dominican Republic players in Major League Baseball. No team from Europe, Africa, or Middle East has ever made it to the World Series final. But there are teams there, but they just haven't made it yet. Girls, by the way, if you're a girl or a woman, you might want to turn your sound down here. Girls were barred from playing, but in 1974, it became, with Title IX in the ascendancy in 1972, in 1974, Little League Baseball actually allowed the first young ladies to play in Little League. But in 74, in New Jersey and Massachusetts, they ruled Little League had no right to bar girls from participating. One defendant, an 11-year-old Marie Pepe from Hoboken, had played in three games in 1972 before Little League threatened to revoke Hoboken's charter. The Little League decided it was too expensive to fight the mounting battles, and so they allowed girls to play. Excuse me, I had to sneak away there and have a little cough. I've got a little bit of a problem today. It's not on your, it's not our antenna that's struggling. It's my throat that's struggling today. One girl had secretly played, by the way, in Little League years earlier. In 1950, Katherine Johnston of Corning, New York, tried out and won a spot on her Little League team. Small and skinny, her hair tucked under her baseball cap, she kind of snuck in and played. She kept playing in 1951 as well, and then Little League said absolutely they had a no-girl policy, which kind of was a sign of the times, wouldn't you say? The first international team to win Little League World Series were, an underdog story. In 1957, the Little League team from Monterrey, Mexico, crossed the footbridge over the Rio Grande. I hope they didn't get in trouble. They came and played their first game on U.S. soil. The game, part of the early rounds of the annual Little League World Series, was in McAllen, Texas. And the team from Monterrey, which only recently had started playing baseball and playing on a makeshift field, they had regularly swept clean broken glass and debris from their field. They didn't expect to win, but they did. And they kept winning against teams from Texas and Kentucky and Mississippi. Many kids had never left Monterrey, Mexico, and they were homesick. Their visas expired, and they ate only two meals a day to save money. Eventually, they made the World Series final and were beaten by a much bigger and stronger team from La Mesa, California, on the back of a perfect game from a 12-year-old pitcher, Angel Maquias. That was the only perfect game ever thrown in Little League World Series championship, by the way. It was a perfect game. And so that was the very first international team, and they got pretty close to ringing the bell, right? Well, we're going to break away again for a couple of seconds. We'll be back with a little bit more about Little League baseball, and today is the opening day of MLB baseball, so that's why we're doing baseball all morning, all right? Hang in there.
You know, Scott, when President Trump announced he was running for president, I called him an egotistical jerk.
Yes, I do remember that. Has your mind changed?
Well, no.
No?
See, you thought I meant that in a negative way. Rookie mistake.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, we're back here. You're listening to Glenn Coble, and the show is called On the Air, and we are on the air at WWGH 107.1. I hope your signal is much better today than it was yesterday. This next little story I'm going to read to you has it's very significant at this time politically. Little League had originated in America, and you know there was kind of a growth of international teams, and they were in the 70s. Let me break away here. We have a phone call. We'll see what the caller has to say.
Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Well, good morning, Glenn. I played Little League. I was born in 41 and played in 52.
All right.
First introduction here in Marion. Don't ever hold me close to dates and times, but pretty close, I think, that's when it was. Bob Feller give out belts to Little League players if your team or individuals went to Cleveland. He was given. I still got my Little League belt.
Cool. How neat.
So, I'll carry on here just a few minutes,
sure.
And I'll get off so you can carry on. But I met Bob Feller several years ago. I think it was in the 90s. He was out there in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
And I was in Tucson visiting friends of ours and went over there where he was coaching, a pitching coach there. And I said, hey, Bob, I said, can I get your autograph? He said, you guys are too big for autographs. He said, if you're a little kid like a little leaguer, he said, I might, he said, I'd consider it. I said, Bob, I was a little leaguer. You give me a belt up in Cleveland Stadium. And he said, oh, my goodness, yeah. He said, okay. He said, I'll find a time for you. And I got a picture, and it's hanging here in the memorabilia room of Bob Feller. And
Tell everybody who Bob Feller is, because some people might not know.
Well, yeah, and you know what? That all the ones that's old enough to know Bob Feller, the rest of them wouldn't know it. But there was a guy also, and you're a baseball guy, and I'll tell Bob Feller was a big-time pitcher for the Cleveland Indians.
Absolutely.
And also there was a, I think, Bob, maybe, you, or Glenn, you can help me out. I think Easter played first base.
Who's that? Did he play at first base? I don't know if he did. I really don't. I don't. I just thought of him as a pitcher. So.
Yeah.
Are you there? Did I lose you? Yep. It looks like we lost our caller. I tell you what, caller, give us a call back. We'll put you back on. I'm sorry. Somehow or other, we lost you.
All right. Feller was a terrific pitcher, and that's how I knew about him. And I've always been a Cubs fan and a Cleveland Indian fan. Now, I understand they're thinking about changing the name of the Indians, and I have not heard what they're thinking about changing it to. But anyway, yeah, I'm sorry we lost him. Somehow or other, in a moment there, one of us hit a button that wasn't the right button, right? So give us a call back, and we'll finish your story. All right, all right. We're on the air. I was going to tell you this story about international teams. They started getting, you know, pretty strong, and Japan had won Little League World Series in '67 and '68, and actually, they got very dominant along with Taiwan, and. Taiwan won three games by a combined 57-0. Three games. They just slaughtered people. And they won the championship. I think it was 73. They won the championship in a 12-0 rout. And after that, Taiwan won in 74. And the Little League decided to take steps to ban teams from advancing past the regional round of the World Series. Their reasoning was international teams were too focused on winning the tournament. After the major backlash, Little League went back and decided that they'd readmit international teams. But it sounds a little familiar with all the voter suppression we've got going on. If you're going to win, we're not going to let you play, right? So they kind of did that for a year to international teams. Anyway, we can thank, by the way, Little League for the batting helmet, which has become everywhere. At Major League Baseball, softball, Little League baseball, and Little League softball, everyone has to wear a helmet, and it's probably saved lives. We don't know because they were wearing a helmet when they got hit in the head. But in 1959, Dr. Creighton Hale, he was the director of research, and he developed the first batting helmet, which had an ear covering. It was a design that Little League quickly implemented, and the Major League Baseball eventually adopted for their players. Now, when I was when I had my sporting goods store, we had there was a big push to provide heart protection for kids, because there was a concern that and there had been a couple of kids that had been killed when there was a baseball thrown at, an advancing runner that hit him square in the chest. And I think there were two kids that actually died from that. It didn't catch on. I do remember several kids' parents made them wear that heart protection when they were playing. And basically what it was is a thing that went over their chest kind of like a bulletproof vest, but it was very, it just covered the heart, and it was kind of absorbent. So if you got hit in the chest, it would absorb a lot of that impact. Now, that has not caught on that I know of, but if you watch Major League Baseball, they have protection over their elbows, over their shoulders, on their sides, on their feet, on their knees. They have it everywhere. Well, if a ball's being thrown at you at 100 miles an hour, I think I'd wear a suit of armor, especially if the pitcher wasn't very good or very accurate. So anyway, but the baseball helmet did catch on, and in 1959, Dr. Hale invented it, and there were also some other things that came along at the same time, including the Little League also was starting to test the aluminum bat and the remote control scoreboard and ump cam. I don't believe has really caught on, but Frank Rizzo during the 1985 Little League World Series final had an ump cam on, which is kind of fun. I like watching that sort of stuff. You can see whether they're really calling it right or wrong. I've often thought that both in Little League, Major League, Minor Leagues, they could go to not having an umpire behind the home plate calling balls and strikes. You know, with the technology we have right now, that little box that you see is pretty accurate. The box that they show you on the screen, several times you'll see during a game that the ball is 4 or 5 inches outside that box and the umpire calls it a strike. And it drives you crazy if you're rooting for that team, and drives you crazy if you're rooting against that team. So anyway, that I believe that they could do away with having the home plate umpire, but I think it's such an important part. You know, it adds the human interest into sports. So that and it also makes it a little bit the outcome isn't so sterile, I guess, because you have human beings calling balls and strikes. You also have human beings out there on the bases calling whether the young man is out or the young woman is out. But now with where they can go back on several of the calls with the television and find out whether they really were out, in major league sports, that's kind of gone by the wayside. But you wouldn't want to have to review every single play. That's why having live umpires out in the field is probably keeps the game moving. You don't have that in Little League, though. You don't have the opportunity to go do instant replay, do you? All right. The first Little Leaguer to make the majors was Joey J. Let's see. I'm trying to see if it tells. Trying to see where he played. The first alumni to do so. Okay, these are other Major League Baseball players that are in the Hall of Fame that were Little Leaguers. Cal Ripken Jr., Nolan Ryan, Tom Seavers, and Joey J. was from Middletown, Connecticut, and he was signed by the Milwaukee Braves back in 1953 at age 17, so he was very young. He didn't go to a college to get his experience. That's kind of an interesting story too. When my son was a senior in high school, and we knew how good he was both at basketball and baseball, he participated in the Mizuno game in Columbus at OSU. Which brought all the best players in Ohio together. And one of the scouts came over to us and said, your son really ought to go to. And he gave me a card from a college in Southern Illinois, I believe it was. He said, if your son goes there, I'll guarantee you he'll get a major league contract. So basically, he wanted him, Andrew, to go to this college, which was, as we found out later, basically a baseball factory. They put out all sorts of major league players. When Andrew, by the way, when Andrew tried out for the Reds, which he did after he graduated, we were told one of the reasons why he didn't make the Reds was because he was too old. He was 22. Now, had he gone right out of high school, like this gentleman had told us, he might have been playing Major League Baseball up until a couple of years ago. He's going to turn 40 this year, so I doubt if he'd still be in there because he was a shortstop, and they don't last as long as the pitchers do. Anyway, where was I? They have all one of the problems all sports teams have is the problem of recruiting. There's always controversies about recruiting, and I coached a couple years Little League Baseball, and there were always coaches that had less than scrupulous behavior would steal away players that I had already recruited because they wanted to get the best players. And there weren't any regulations basically on stealing players. And I lost several really good players that way, but I also kept some players that people didn't recognize as really good because, I let everybody play, and I found out which ones were the best, and those were the ones that I put in the positions. Now, I did let everybody play in every game, and that was kind of the rule. So, anyway, we're going to break away here for about 15 minutes and come back later and talk about Major League Baseball. We kind of covered a little bit about Little League, right? All right.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, your place for politics, the only local